a lot of these we have to hate. So I did put mandatory ones that I know we're going to be pissed off. Snow White, absolutely. I'm sorry. You guys need to
suffer. No, dude, I'm trying to go on that one.
Okay, okay.
That one, I want to get drunk and watch that one.
Minecraft movie, we have to suffer.
Yeah.
This is for me and you to suffer, is the resurrection of the Christ. Yeah, because we both hate the passion of the Christ. So I'm putting both of us through this torture. Yeah. The minute, that's why April has two movies that are mandatory.
God damn it.
All right, going in 5, 4, 3, 2.
What's up, everybody? This is the Red Band Podcast, your source for all film and TV related news and topics. I'm your host, Anthony King, and of course with me is my co-host,
Adrian G. Fuentes.
And sitting over there in the control room is our technical director, Mike Cards.
Welcome back, everybody.
Yeah, welcome back, guys. How are you guys doing this fine evening?
God, I want a sponsor from this drink so bad.
What drink? What are you drinking, Mike? What are you drinking over there?
Am I allowed to say it?
Yeah, fuck it. No, we're going to steal sponsors this year. All right, we're not sponsored, we're just going to steal it. So we're just going to talk about you until you sponsor us.
Yeah, I know, for real. So, hey, yo, I'm drinking Thirst Trap.
I like how you even said it like you're sponsoring it.
I'm drinking Thirst Trap Margarita Wine Cocktail.
Yeah, these are actually pretty good, Adrian.
These are actually really good. You said you got this from a winery?
I got these from Total Wine,
right?
Yeah. Total Wine.
Yeah. Okay. I had a family member introduce me to them. I'm like, damn, these are good.
You know what? I feel like we should just like say what we're doing or something or what we're drinking. Take the snippet.
I was about to say like Netflix, how they have to tell their writers. Yeah, just tell them what to do, exactly what they're doing all the time. I am drinking this drink.
Right? I know, dumbing down the writing. How dare you talk to me like that? I'm going to take a drink of this cocktail. As they're like sipping, continuing to argue.
All right, well, this is not, of course, a alcohol podcast. We're not talking about beers or wines and everything. This is, of course, film news, film podcast. So let's just jump right into the film news because we got some heavy shit going on right now.
I know.
This one hits hard. This one hits really hard for this first one. David Lynch. That's right. David Lynch, writer, director of famous movies and television series like Twin Peaks, Blue Velvet, Elephant Man, the original Dune. Like, the list goes on. Eraserhead. The list goes on, man. But he passed.
Fuck!
This one hits hard for us because he's one of our favorite writers and directors. So, yeah, he passed away at 78.
That man was a visionary of bringing modern noir mixed with black comedy. Like, this man was just a visionary of just capturing a certain new genre that nobody else could capture.
And you do not fuck with this man's picture or ideas or vision.
You do not fuck with this man's vision.
And you absolutely did not tell this man how many minutes he's running on a shoot.
If you tell him we need to cut it, you're going to get yelled at.
Oh, yeah. We got a clip right here just for that. This is like one of his like most like popular clips about him just going off on this poor woman because she's bringing up the minutes of how much they're running.
Yeah,
we'll show it.
Do you want to cut the time down?
What is this with everybody?
No.
What is it? Really?
It's me. It's
I'm serious. Fucking A, man. It drives me nuts. Who gives a fucking shit how long a scene is?
Dude, he's not wrong. That's the thing.
He's not wrong, man.
For real.
Not at all.
When you're working with a director or any filmmaker, you want to get the best products, or of course you can allow them to have the time they need.
Yeah.
Dude, like I said, unfortunately, this person's trying to count the seconds or the minutes, and he's like, I don't give a fuck about the minutes.
Right. I'm like, let me just shoot the damn scene.
Mm-hmm.
Like, fuck, man.
Because no one's bitching when the movie comes out good.
No one bitches about that because they're getting the money they want.
I feel like David Lynch is the modern John Ford. And that's why it made sense for him to play.
Oh, yeah.
In the Tannenbaums.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. But yes, it's sad. It's very sad that this man passed away. Did they say what caused?
Emphysema.
Emphysema? Okay.
Emphysema. So, yeah.
That's really unfortunate. That's a heavy hitter for us, though.
For real.
Legend in the film industry. So he'll definitely be missed. Going over our next film news topic, what we have here, trailers. A lot of trailers have been released this week. coming up. I mean, it's the beginning of the year, so of course every film studio wants to show what they're going to provide for their big blockbuster, their big film for the year. So we got to run down to some of these trailers, man. Until Dawn, yes, the video game that's now being turned into a film. Yeah. We finally got the first release trailer for it. How do you guys feel about that one?
Yeah, I mean, I'm.
This is the Is this the second PlayStation Production Studios movie? Because I think the first one was Uncharted, right?
It was Uncharted
movie, not television. Sorry.
PlayStation Productions.
Yeah. Because that was the one big thing I noticed. That big old PlayStation Productions.
I want to say yes.
And it's interesting. Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting with Until Dawn too, because it doesn't really directly.
Gran Turismo.
That's right. That's true.
This is the third one.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
With the whole lineup of them.
But with Until Dawn, it's pretty interesting. It's creating this Groundhog Day, like, you know, Happy Death Day.
Yeah.
And it really has like the elements of like that video game Dead by Daylight, where it's like every single retrial run, it's a new killer.
Yeah. But the one thing I pointed out earlier was that, which you didn't even know, was it's technically a franchise.
Yeah, I didn't know that it was a franchise. I only knew the original first title, Until Dawn.
Because they never marketed it as an Until Dawn game.
Yeah.
It was just called something else.
I was more familiar with their Dark Pictures anthologies, you know, like Metal Madonna and stuff like that.
Yes. But it looks like they took out elements from the franchise itself and with bits, at least what it looks like from the shadows of other, you know, their anthology series.
Yeah.
Or maybe, but might be everything from the entire franchise. I don't know yet.
I was about to say, because throughout the, I've followed a little bit of Until Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I know of the Wendigo one. So, and from the trailer that I've seen, it showed elements of like, or at least like the mouth-wise, like fangs. Wendigo type fang kind of thing. And I kind of like the lineup of how it's kind of done. Mm-hmm. Instead of just being like a linear thing where it's like, oh, okay, everyone just dies one at a time until there's like two survivors. Because there's always two survivors, you know? And by taking that and then flipping it into, okay, everybody dies until the sand runs out and then it starts over, then everyone's back alive again, kind of fills in, one, the trope of starting the game over, trying to do something different each time, and then two, something of a certain theme instead of sticking to one particular theme. And since there's like multiple versions, because there's like three, right? Three is what I've heard.
Yeah.
So since if there's three, then it kind of fills in like, all right, instead of trying to have to choose one particular
game or something to focus on
or antagonist, then it's like, okay, if we reverse it to where you have to start the day over again and try to live until dawn, then it's a new killer each time.
Yeah.
Then it's like, okay, you can kind of expand a little bit more and add more, as much of your IP as possible.
You can cover more ground materia of the IP to implement into your story without it feeling crammed.
Yeah, and I kind of like that too, because like as you're starting the day over and trying to survive, it's not the same threat. It's someone entirely different.
Yeah.
And where it goes from like one person who's masked or weird creatures. I mean, we saw a silhouette of some huge troll-like thing in the rain.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's like, okay, like, the gap from regular person to weird type of anthology or pantheon-esque
troll
is just like vast. Yeah. So it's just that just kind of sets the bar of like this could be your antagonist can be anyone and anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's pretty interesting.
No, it looks interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
But what do you feel about that Daredevil Born Again trailer?
I love that one.
Yeah, that was it.
Fuck.
That was it, guys.
God, I'm getting my Netflix Daredevil again. Dude,
that's
Netflix Daredevil was
peak.
Like just
just chef's kiss. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, because it gave us something that we grew up as kids and
I was an adult.
No. No, I'm talking about we grew up as kids watching the superhero, you know. The Daredevil, Punisher. But now as we go older, you know, obviously we don't want to stick to watching the same thing over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
We want to mature it up.
Yeah, exactly
what we got.
Yeah. No, it was beautiful. I think the trailer of this is so freaking cool. seeing all the original cast again.
Yep. Yeah.
I love how there's no recasting. Everyone's the same.
I like they didn't just start all over with a story. It's like, no, all that happened, so we're just going to keep moving forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all the like the little hints everywhere, bringing back Bullseye.
Oh, yeah.
Love that guy. Love the character who played him in the last season of Daredevil. Love that. I loved how they brought back Froggy or Foggy.
Foggy, yeah. Foggy. Yeah.
I don't know why I say Froggy. I love how they brought back freaking Punisher well. Just overall showing respect to the franchise that existed before this Marvel franchise has, you know, like just showing respect for that Netflix
version. Now, what I like about it, actually, with that one little, just one little split scene, split second, which you see is when he cracks the leg.
It breaks that. Yeah.
Dude, oh because my God.
It just shows that hand to hand combat that we don't normally like. Obviously, not all Marvel films they have the hand to hand combat.
Yeah.
But it always is punching, kicking. They fall to the ground and that's it.
That's it. You don't see that brutalness to it.
That brutalness to it, which dude, he's fighting for his life.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God! Can we show that part? Are we allowed?
I don't know.
If we say it's fake.
No.
It's not that. That's fake.
It's just that. Yeah, it's just the quick segment from the scene.
I want to say it was like a little bit towards the end.
It was towards the end, yeah.
Right? Yep.
Oh, right, there we go. Okay, hang on. Let me make sure I transition over properly. Oh, fuck!
Right there. That crunch, too. You hear that crunch.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, so definitely I'm excited for that one when it's going to finally get released.
Yeah.
And also hoping to, but one quick note on it. They just... We know it's understand it's in the same MCU universe.
Yeah.
It's all the same thing. Just don't fucking mention it ever.
Yeah, you don't need to mention it. You know it's there, so it's no point in mentioning it.
Can I just like
see if Captain Marvel shows up at the end?
Right. Can I just point out that Daredevil really micromanages Hell's Kitchen?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
no, absolutely.
The rest of New York, not so much, but Hell's Kitchen.
This is my turf.
This is my turf. So, like, you don't have to worry about this area Spider-Man or any other superhero. Mm-hmm. Like, Hell's Kitchen's mine, you know? And then if you need some help from Harlem, then you have Luke Cage.
Yeah.
Dude, it's the ghetto, man. No hero ever helped out the ghetto.
No, I see.
For real. When have I last seen, like, Captain America actually in the ghetto?
No.
Bro's always in Manhattan.
Yeah, that's true. You got to save it for the brother heroes.
You know, I can see Captain America coming up and be like, no problem. Saving the day. It's what I do. Captain, we have so much crime in our area. Can you just kind of come in on the weekends or something and just kind of make an appearance?
Isn't there a little black Spider-Man around here that can handle that?
We just promoted a guy. Like, you know, he'd be better. And then, God forbid, any X-Men show up and he's like, Well, if it ain't one of you dirty DNA hogging little sons of bitches. Captain America's all for everyone, except when it comes for the mutants.
And then, of course, the last two trailers we want to mention, both of these are Neon production. Neon has been producing quite a bit lately. Yeah. Last year, they had Long Legs and Cuckoo. Now they have The Monkey, which that one looks like a... Pretty interesting. That looks pretty fun.
Yeah, that one looks like a... That looks chaos. Like a riot. Yeah. Sorry. Man, that cocktail.
And then, of course, the other one with Steven Soderbergh, which is The Presence.
Yes.
And the way that is filmed looks really nice.
Yeah.
All super extreme wide-angle lenses with a nice Steadicam flotation to it.
Yeah.
It seems like it's going to be a lot of long takes.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like a Birdman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I like how like the camera kind of swivels and like turns around the characters. Like it really gets into the action.
And this isn't a found footage movie.
No. No. It has like some found footage elements to it.
But it's not.
It's not. Yeah, yeah.
I kind of like that more.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not just like.
And I think that one's all Asian cast too, for the most part.
Really?
Yeah.
Man. Hey, I must be doing something because I didn't see any, you know, any HBO, you know? I wasn't seeing skin. I didn't see one chopstick, bro. How is this representation? This is fucking nuts.
I mean, we are getting more films that are like more produced by minorities. So like you still got stuff like Presence, which has like huge Asian demographic. But even Sinners with another like Jordan Peele type of film. Yep. You get The Woman in the Yard. We just saw that trailer.
Oh, no, that was a Ryan Coogler film.
Oh, sorry, Ryan Coogler. That yeah, was Ryan Coogler, but then Woman in the Yard. Yep. That was really interesting. So we're starting to get a lot of like minority black films too. Yeah.
So Neon produced 15 films last year. Ooh. Upcoming slate, they have 6 films already slated, dated, with 2 more undated.
Damn.
Wow. Yeah.
So there's actually some pretty interesting films. And what's really actually shocking to me is I'm not seeing a lot of blockbusters or franchises this year coming up.
I think they finally got the hint of just like...
like we're starting to get like more independent and more original stories. Just a little bit.
A little bit. And I think this is more of a test of the water kind of situation.
If these do good.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where like, you know what, let's throw a few out there and see what happens.
Then it
could be, you know, a test of the water situation. Or it could be a thing where a couple of years ago when the studios were in desperate need of money where they said, well, we can't afford these expensive ones.
That's true. No, a lot of these studios cannot afford these high, big budgets right now. Everyone's losing money.
But also, it is to me a response to a lot of these low budget, not I'll say low budget films, but lower, you know.
Lower budget films getting high returns.
Yes. Yeah. Which we did see in a couple years back, obviously starting with the John Wick. But, you know, you had other films.
John Wick, Long Legs, remember, that was a $9 million budget and got like, what, almost $200 million back.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, yeah. It makes sense. Produce these lower budget films with great stories and you're still going to get incredible returns. Yeah, you're not getting the $1 billion marks, but at that point, you're only trying to get $1 billion back to claim you hit the $1 billion mark.
Yeah.
But most of those $1 billion mark movies did not make $1 billion because of how much production and money they put into those films.
Yeah.
So you think these movies are kind of reeling back and kind of...
the last...
they're not shooting as high as for like... the $1 billion revenue, but more of like, hey, yo, if we can make back like 200, 300 million, that's a win, especially for a movie that's a budget of, you know, 20 million, 10 million, whatever. Kind of.
I think the studios are feeling the effects of the last couple years only making big production films out of clout and name recognition. And now because that financially hit them so hard, they need to go back to smarter business practices. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And especially, I don't know if you pay attention to the credits itself to most of the big budget films, you'll see that a lot of people are credited as producers. There is no longer that.
That's right.
There's no longer, you know, 2 or 3 people producing the movie. No, there's
about like 40 people producing. 40 people
putting money into it. So all these people need to get their money back as well.
And some.
And
with
some.
With interest.
So that, you know, when it says it made... you know, $200 million profit, well, guess what? That $200 million has to be pulled out for someone who put in $5 million, another person who put $2 million, another person who, $6
million. Yeah.
So all that money comes right back out.
Yeah.
So the studio gets stuck with,
$100 million. Whatever change is left.
God, that's just rough.
So now they need it. This is smart. If you produce these lower budget films with incredible filmmakers, they're going to get high returns because not only is the name going to be by itself bringing people into theaters, but they're trying to recreate that John Wick word of mouth.
Yeah.
A few people see it and it gets huge commercial critic success. More people are going to hear from word and then start flocking to the theaters. And then we're going to have exponential growth in our box offices. That's what they're hoping for.
So they're also, like, damn, we got to make actually good movies.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, but... whoever they hire to edit the trailers as well.
That is true. That's something we'll talk about later in a bit, but that is also very important too. Absolutely. So
obviously there's a style to it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people whoever's doing this just follows a certain like pattern or style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they fucking log it down.
It works. It works. Yeah. But yeah, we'll definitely dive deeper into that with our main topic. But let's cover over this last bit of film news before we hit our break. What we have here is our update on the LA County wildfires. Yeah. Some figures being thrown out now of like costs and how much damages and everything's going about. But man, more than 12,000 structures destroyed since Tuesday.
Jesus.
And what it's looking at is we might have anywhere between $135 billion to $150 billion in damages.
Yeah.
Which they did some estimated compares. Hurricane Helen, back in fall, when it ran through 6 states, for its maximum estimated value of damages was $250 billion. Remember, 6 states took that effect.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
LA by itself, not even the whole state of California, LA by itself is racking in almost $150 billion. They're claiming insurers are going to lose about $40 billion. And it's, I think they're going to say this is going to be the costliest natural disaster. Not the deadliest or biggest, but the costliest natural disaster in U.S. history.
Yeah. And that's just because, simply because we have multi-million dollar mansions.
Yeah. Being swept through.
Yeah.
So that's what, unfortunately, that's what drives up the cost. But at the same time, at the end of the day, you do got to see that these are people's homes as well.
I know. Those, you're seeing all the social media, the comments, you know, fuck these guys. They can make their money back. Woohoo. They're rich and everything. It's
There are a few of those, but not everyone.
There's still people by then at the end of the day. Yes. They lost homes. They lost memories and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, they can get their, they have insured homes. They're going to get their money back. They can rebuild. But that's still like an impactful moment.
Yeah. No, as people forget that a lot of these people as well is
they're not kinda, all celebrities. They're not celebrities.
And a lot of times these people are kind of technically grandfathered into the housing situation where, yes, they probably worked in Hollywood in the 80s
or 70s.
And that's
when everything was cheaper.
Yeah. So they bought their house at that time and essentially now they just live there. That's it. Mm-hmm. And like I said, they haven't worked since then, or they can't work since then. And now their house is gone.
Yeah.
I know. Sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say, like, I know that, sorry, I had multiple things going through my head first now. In that cocktail. Damn. Thirst trap. Let's go. No, but one of the things that they're definitely kind of battling against is, one, you had some people claiming that, like, oh, hey, if we put everything into it, we can have, you know, LA back up and running in like 4 years. And I'm like, like the clearing of just the burnt wreckage alone is going to take like 2 years.
But we talked about last episode too. I mean, in the next like 4 years, how many sports events, major worldwide international sports events we're hosting? I mean, Olympics, Paralympics, the women's nationals, FIFA, the Grand Prix, all that stuff.
Like, trying to get it cleared and restructured before that time while trying to bank these huge events as well. It's going to be in a very expensive, very costly, I want to say like probably 10 years.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and for anyone who actually, I brought this up right here, anyone that wants to help out, you know, who wants to donate, the major ones you might want to think about is like the American Red Cross, Salvation Army, the LA Fire Department.
Watch out for scams. There's going to be a lot of people scamming. Yeah,
that's why I would warn you. They've already said it. I'm not a big... They said, yes, you can go on GoFundMe to help out. Be again, very wary about when doing that. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you that. A lot of people are using that to scam people.
Yeah.
So I would highly recommend just go to like the major one. The major ones are known for, like I said, American Red Cross, LA Fire Department, LA Police Department.
Reputable ones, yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones you want to help out. And if you go onto like the... if you Google search, you know, to donate for LA, there are a few articles like the LA Daily News that brings up an entire list of places that you could donate to that'll help out, help out directly.
Whether it be money or food or clothing, just if you're in the area and you're able to help out, or if you just want to send donations to any of the areas that the list includes, then, I mean...
We'll probably have like a list of actual organizations you can donate to if you want to in the description below.
Yeah. So please... Yes.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we're going to cover our main topic. So stay tuned. We'll be right back to you guys.
Here are some smaller news topics that couldn't make it into this week's episode. Starting, Warner Brothers is working on a new Gremlins and Goonies movie. Drake files a lawsuit against UMG for defamation for promoting Not Like Us. And the Sundance Film Festival still plans to open on the 25th of January, despite the fires in LA, with even one of its heads losing her home, saying with that they are calling a mission to support the artists. That's it for the film news. Now back to our scheduled programming.
And we are back, covering over our main topic tonight. Warner Brothers is having a major shakeup within its ranks and its structure in general for this year, where they're fully embracing auteur directors.
Auteur
directors.
You gotta put that auteur.
Mm-hmm. You know? Now, we talked about that earlier, you know, how like David Lynch is the type of, you know, auteur director. He wants to be involved in everything, writing, directing, lighting, DP, everything. Like,
it's a person who wears multiple hats for their shoot.
Exactly. So this sounds like what they're trying to promote and advertise is they're trying to go back to more independent, smaller films. Mm-hmm. But for me, in reality, just knowing from the last 2 years of their finances, it sounds like they're cutting costs. It sounds like a cost-cutting thing to me. Not like trying to go back into finding these really niche filmmakers and these indie artists and everything and to bring back the spirit. It doesn't really feel like that. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. It's seems cheap.
Cheap? The idea of under the guise of trying to collect more acclaimed directors, but really trying to fit as many positions as possible into one person.
Yeah.
So like trying to get...
You want to cut down your crew.
Yeah. You want one person to run multiple positions so that you have to pay less people.
Or possibly as well is just a theory. They're trying to get a couple of tours, try to find the diamond in the rough.
To build them up. They're doing the Universal tactic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So Universal does that. They'll find the types of auteur directors or they're independent artists. They're the filmmakers and they want to build them up. They're looking for their Jordan Peele.
Yes.
That's what they're looking for.
But they've been building a roster for the last few years.
Yeah, they have.
Yes. Warner Brothers is now just starting on it. It's kind of like...
catch up.
Yeah. And from the feel of it, I mean, personally, I would probably want to go to Universal because it's like, oh, hey, like you have... you got Christopher Nolan, you got Jordan Peele, you got both the Daniels who did it everywhere, everything everywhere all at once. Mm-hmm. You got Steven Spielberg and, you know, you had like a whole roster.
The contracts for Universal are better. Filmmakers have more creative control.
Yeah.
Warner Brothers, unfortunately, is infamously known for being too involved into productions. Yeah. That's why anytime you usually hear directors, producers, creative differences, that usually tends to be something happening in Warner Brothers.
So yeah. You either have to already be established and be a big name and just know how to handle executives. Mm-hmm. But if you're coming in trying to gather acclaimed directors that are still kind of like, they're not quite up there. Like Ryan Coogler is up there.
Yeah.
But you know, almost up there, mm-hmm. but just isn't quite super established yet to just say like, hey, I'm going to have a $300 budget. Fuck it.
That's more unfortunate. Like I love Ryan Coogler. He's a fantastic director. I have no faults in his style and he's great. What I saw was in the last couple years, 5-6 years, hey man, you made this independent film. Here's a blockbuster.
Yeah. You just jump.
You jumped.
Yeah.
Now, no problem, because I love Black Panther. Nothing wrong with the cinematography, filming, anything like that. It's all good. That was just the nature of how things were. Mm-hmm. To me, yeah, he's still more of an auteur, independent, direct, like lower independent to me. Even though he does blockbusters and stuff like that, I'll still always see him in that era because for me, that's where he flourishes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like you said, it's just tough to give a person, you know, a person's used to handling, you know, $5 million budgets.
Yeah, yeah.
Telling them they have to spend $200 million or that.
It's hard.
It's hard. Or spend.
You're wasting money. You're wasting money.
You have to spend that $100 million. And it's, to me, it's like, if you were to put me in that spot, like, I have no clue how to throw this around.
That's where you're like, we'll just get extras lying around. Give me 10 hundred extras. I want some cars over here. Like, that's how you just start wasting things. Yeah.
That as well as WB is notorious for is overstepping their boundaries.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Which famously happened with Batman v Superman, when you had 10 different producers all wanted their input onto the film, and you had the executives wanted their input in the film as well.
I mean, look at film. You said before, look at film credits now.
Yeah.
Back in the days, you know, you had 4, max 5 producers.
Yeah, 5 producers, maybe 2 executive producers, and that's it.
And now you're seeing like 8 executive producers, 40 producers, 20 associate producers. Like the list goes on. It's too many hands in the pot. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, since everyone's putting their money, they obviously put your hand in the pot. Because if, you know, if I'm putting in $2 million, I want my word in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So unfortunately, the more people, the more hands, the more people want to talk, they want to add. Mm-hmm. And then you get pointless scenes or you get product placement, or you get someone's nephew in the background because that's what they wanted.
And I think now studios are finally learned a lesson. So what happened in like the last 2 years, you know, when you get films like Long Legs, which $9 million production, almost $200 million back in box office, like they're looking back at those smaller productions that still look fantastic, that still create incredible stories, and people are still going to theaters to see that. Yeah. They're looking for that word of mouth. They're looking for that John Wick.
Yeah, but that's when you give the artists pretty much let them do
reins.
Yeah, just let them do it. You just let them free. Now I don't say free reign, but I mean like just let them do their thing. That's it.
Are you thinking that we're starting to see a little bit more of a what's it called? I want to say realism or realistic goal wise, where it was like the last 10 years or so, the goal is to hit $1 billion.
Yeah.
Every movie.
You wanted the name recognition. You wanted the clout to say, yeah, bam, I made a $1 billion movie. Mm-hmm. But if you, like I said, if you really look at those movies that made over $1 billion, they didn't actually, at the end of the day, make $1 billion from those movies.
Yeah.
Because, of course, those budgets, $350 million, $400 million.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's
why were incredibly expensive movies. And that's just the budget by themselves, not including the marketing costs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's why, like, the Marvel films, like the Infinity War, and those films, even though they claim, you know, obviously they made over $1 billion, their money's really coming in from merchandise, from the theme parks. Mm-hmm. That's where they're making the money from, because that's what they want. Yes, you spent your tickets. They made the billion, but reality not bringing that much. True money comes in from what it comes afterwards.
But that has always been Disney's practice.
Yes.
And let them do their practice. But let Disney do that. But other studios were trying to follow that as well, not realizing it's stupid because you're not merchandising. You just saw numbers and figures.
Yes. And yes, you're selling small amounts of merchandise.
But nowhere near.
Yeah.
That's Disney's practice. They know those movies aren't making the money. They know the t-shirts will make the monies, the toothbrush, the calendars, the backpacks, all the merch. That's what they're making their money off of. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Warner Brothers doesn't have that type of merch to pull.
No.
Universal doesn't even have that much merch to pull.
I mean, like I said, Universal goes after their IPs at the theme parks and collectibles. I mean, obviously some t-shirts, you know, stuff like that.
Universal has been branching out to other stuff like Hot Topic recently and stuff like that, where they're finally now really getting into the merch game.
Yeah.
But their movies still make money. They still prioritize that.
They prioritize the movie over the merch.
Yes. But even then that the students need to understand is how Universal, you know, are making, you know, money off their merch.
Mm-hmm.
It's from films that were like from 20 years ago.
Yeah, it's new stuff.
Yeah. Like they're still making money off Jurassic Park, the original one, not the Jurassic World.
That's true. And that will always be a moneymaker.
Yeah. So, I mean, newer studios are trying to do that. Like I said, WB, I'm pretty sure they attempted with the whole Justice League, Batman v Superman.
Merching that stuff.
But no one wants that still. They all want the classic animated Batman. They want the, even though they own that property, but they don't want the logo from Batman v Superman. They want the animated series. They want the comic book logo of Batman.
Yeah.
They want that.
So do you think, though, because now we're looking at, we looked at a whole calendar for like a lot of film releases this year, and we're not getting the big numbers of blockbusters that we got from the last couple of years. Do you think it's a smart move going back to these auteur directors and doing these smaller, lower budget productions? Not small or low budget, but just smaller budget productions.
Yes, because I'm looking at the list and what would it cost, it looks like they're going with a franchise route with auteur and relatively lower budgets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got movies like, you know, Clayface. You know, you got the
Batman.
The Batman.
That one's still in pre-production.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not even looking at those. I'm looking at the Conjuring
this year.
I'm looking at like Presence, Companion, Mickey 17, Sinners, not actual known names, because you still get those blockbusters like Minecraft, you know, Superman, F1, all that stuff, Final Fantasy.
But even then, I don't know if you noticed the trend the last couple years of some franchise films where they are getting a relatively lower budget.
Yeah, yeah, they are decreasing the budgets on these. Yes, yes, that's correct.
Mm.
But
it's becoming expensive.
Yeah.
Too expensive.
Yeah. Like on this list that I'm even looking at right now, the most expensive one I can probably see is going to be Superman and Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Minecraft. I'll say that too.
Yeah.
I'll put Minecraft on the list. On there. But I mean, other than those kind of three, well, F1, that's a franchise one, isn't it?
No. That's just a racing team.
Yeah, that's a racing one, yeah.
So, I mean, other than before, you would see like multiple franchise on this
You'll
list.
You'll see six Marvel films, maybe some others. I mean, how many Superman or superhero films were actually getting this year? Very little.
Very little. Because they're pulling back because we hit
superhero fatigue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we have hit super fatigue, which I called it a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I kept saying, dude, we're getting tired of this. And like, no, sure enough, we're all getting a little tired of it. But if we get a little by little, we'll be fine. Mm.
So I'm actually kind of liking the switch up that Warner Brothers is actually attempting because, man. Yeah.
Because what I'm seeing on the list is it's going from like franchise to non-franchise. Franchise. Yeah.
They're mixing it up.
Yeah.
So giving more out there variety instead of the same thing over and over and over again. And I think they're slowly learning the lessons, but of course they're going to still have some spillage over of some stupid decisions or, you know, the same blame this person's fault, this person's fault. Because it's funny, we have another article that kind of connects to this is how the chief marketing person in charge of the last 3 years for like all the trailers, advertises, marketing, they just fired his ass right after he had a 3-year renewal contract too. Jeez. So immediately right after he renewed that, they canned his ass.
So
they say why?
Yeah.
Let's be honest. They need someone to blame. The last couple of years, they've been dropping figures. Who's the first person you're going to blame? Marketing.
Mm.
You guys didn't do your job to bring in the people to theaters.
Bro, we made the trailer as you wanted it. Mm-hmm. We only make the trailer from the dailies you give us.
Well, it's not just trailers, though. It's just marketing in general. How are you getting the word out about this film?
Mm. Yeah. And unfortunately, I've always said there's certain things that shouldn't be marketed.
Yeah.
I don't want, to me, the dumbest marketing in the world. I will stick to this, Doritos. I don't know how many times I have seen in the store a fucking movie on a Doritos bag. That does not make me want to watch that movie.
That's very true.
Where they just have like a picture or something of the character on the Doritos.
Yes.
Bag?
Yeah. And it says sign up to win something. And they have some character on there and like that never, when you put it on food, when you put it like
on the can or something.
Some stupid, you know, try to market on some stupid device or like it just doesn't work.
Well, back in the days, that was the thing. Yes. It's like, hey, we want to let you know because people like Doritos and you see this, it'll remind you, hey, this is coming out, whatever. Now, marketing is just spilled everywhere just to remind you it exists, not to entice you to go see it. It just wants to constantly parade you in the face like we exist. We're here. Mm-hmm. Which when you get into over-marketing.
Yes. Which, to me, they haven't caught up. The studios have not caught up on more recent trends, because I would say the most popular way for me to actually, I would say I would watch a movie if either the actors or the director or the writers show up on a podcast.
Mm.
That is, to me, is a smart way where the studio says, hey, we'll give you $5,000, get these people on this podcast, you know, interview them. Because, dude, I do not want to watch these on either the morning news, late night shows. Right?
Because they don't ask the real questions of anything.
I mean, now they're just moving along with the trends with social media. They're on TikTok. They're on Instagram. Stuff like that.
They still are still doing late night shows.
Yeah.
How many people are actually watching?
They're still wasting money in other ventures that shouldn't be necessary.
Morning news, the news, like when they do just a 5-minute segment on TV, it's like no one cares about that. People actually sit there and watch it on podcasts or longer format interviews. Mm-hmm. That's where I think they should put more marketing towards, because people actually want to sit there and like, oh, I want to listen to this person talk for 30 minutes about this movie. Mm-hmm. Or hell, even like, let's say I'm looking here like Barbie.
Yeah.
Honestly, I would have rather sat there watching 40 minutes of Margot Robbie talking about how she wanted to make the movie.
Yeah.
Versus just a 3-minute clip on, you know, what's it called? On one of those late night shows.
Yeah.
Now you have it on Hot Ones.
Yeah.
No, like
the late night show format kind of for me is like a dead format.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, there is still certain areas like television and entertainment that is really dying down, but people really holding on to it because they don't want it to die.
Yes. But as well, another thing I will say that on top of that, when, you know, they are moving towards, I won't, like, you know, online.
Social
like,
media.
The social media. Yeah. But somehow they stuck onto the same format from television, but now on social media. Like, unfortunately, like the ones on Variety, when they have like the person talk on there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the top 10 questions, you know, asked, you know. Unfortunately, it just follows the same format.
Yeah.
And it gets really repetitive and boring after a while.
True that. That's true.
When, but most people actually want to hear that person just talk.
Yeah.
I think I miss Inside the Actor Studio.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, remember that?
Yeah, no, I remember that.
But that one was for like those that were really interested in film.
Yeah, those are for film people, film buffs, man.
You know, James Lipton would have just led us to real hard asking questions, you know, about the characters and driven motives. Whereas just like today's shows, you get like 5 minutes of just like, so what was it like working with? And you're like, how does this help me promote for Superman?
I just keep thinking about the Wicked interviews. That's all I'm thinking about, man.
Hey, we got you this gift basket. And they like on each other too. They're like, oh my God. Can you believe this is happening? Oh my God. Like, bitch, don't act like you just fucked SpongeBob on all right from Broadway, got him divorced, and then have him act in the same movie. Like, shut your ass up. All right, stop backing like, oh my God, I've arrived. Oh, shit.
But another thing we brought up earlier was the trailers for this other film, others like from Neon. Mm-hmm.
Stylized trailers. Cool, yeah.
Whoever's doing their trailers, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, Neon is good with their trailers.
I want to say, let me look to see who is the same.
Because, okay, obviously there's an art to making trailers. Mm-hmm. The problem with the big budget of films, trailers, is they reveal way too much.
We got to give you all the information.
Which is a complaint we had for years ourselves. But like I said, it's just like the biggest for me, like even though I can't remember as a kid, but the biggest blunder was like Terminator 2. Mm-hmm. That trailer, which if you watch the very first one, he was the villain. He was the antagonist of the story. Mm-hmm. In the trailer, they decided to reveal, no, he's actually now the hero. Versus, you know, which would have been more effective if you watched it in theaters for the first time. You're like, holy fuck, he's about to kill Sarah Connor. Mm-hmm. Oh no, he's actually going to save her.
And there was a period like 2006 to like 2012, trailers were doing good. They were really being very mystic, mysterious with the information. Yeah. They're just showing the bare minimum of what things to be. And then they kind of just reeled that back to the old fashioned ways. Like, remember back like in the like 60s, 50s trailers and movie ads where they told you the entire plot from start to finish?
Yeah.
And they'll give you all the actors' names who are in it and what roles they're doing. See, Prescott, he's a man of time.
Oh,
and he's
gonna be,
and those trailers were like 2-4 minutes long.
Yes.
And over the decades, it got shorter, shorter, shorter. And then you got to like the early 2000s, are like, hey, let's get really like, let's give them no information. Let's get teasers out. What a teaser. Oh, we're going to just do this whole new thing. We're going to give them like 30 seconds of like maybe a logo, maybe a voice sample. You seem like,
or a scene that has nothing to do with the film
itself.
Yeah,
just, yeah. But it piqued your interest because of the, it's mysterious. You don't know the whole thing about it. So you can go into this movie and be surprised. And then for some reason, studios just kind of slowly going back to like the 90s. We need to tell them the whole story. We need to tell you the plot twist happening in the trailer so you understand.
I mean, it also depends on who the marketing team is
for
it. And because Neon is with A24, yeah?
No.
Or no?
No. Two different studios.
Two different studios completely?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I mean, depending who you're working with, I mean, for A24, they work with trailer houses of like AV Squad, Geronimo Productions, Grandson, and Mark Wolin and Associates, for examples. So, I mean, it just depends on who you go to for.
I'm pretty sure they probably do one like cut of the trailer where I'm pretty sure like they told them just do what you know, make a trailer for us.
And yeah.
It comes out really good, but they're like, not enough information. We need more.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, for these ones, they operate to a certain degree depending on one, what the movie is about and what theme of the movie is, and then versus what they're kind of looking to showcase. So mm-hmm. in this case, for like, say, what was it? Presence?
Yeah.
Or something? So say the overall theme for that one is like a horror movie, mm-hmm. you know?
But we've worked on trailers before. That's like one of our specialties. We do movie trailers, but mm-hmm. what's the one thing we always focus on? Mood.
Mood, yeah.
And that's one thing that these type of trailers, Neon A24, they focus primarily on setting the mood.
Yeah, letting you know, like, hey, if this is for long legs, if this is a horror, or not really horror, but like a suspense mm-hmm. of something that's stylistic and also really disturbing, they're going to focus on that mood of something is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then same thing with like A24 movies, depending on what type of movie they're looking to make,
mm-hmm.
that same thing is going to also translate into a mood of something horror or scary or suspenseful. Mm-hmm. And then they're going
to drama, love. Yeah.
And they're going to play on those. Whereas you have a marketing team of a movie that doesn't really have much substance in their actual plot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also a factor as well with your movies, is that if it doesn't have any substance to it and focuses more on visuals, like Fast and Furious is not going to have much substance.
Yeah.
You know, we got to go fast. We got to save blah, 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 blah.
Family.
Then you're going to show more of the fucking GT flying out of the building mm-hmm. or whatever the fucking car was in Dubai.
Yeah.
Out of the 100 floor window into like the 86th floor. Mm. And like, you're going to show more of that.
No. That I get, you know, for action films and blockbusters, I get that. That's unfortunately the style you have to stick to, because mm-hmm. you have to bring people in for that. You have to show the explosions. You have to show loud. You have to do that. But what I'm talking about is
when they literally explain the entire plot almost from start to finish.
Like I said, long
timeline.
Yes.
Timeline, like I said, trailers.
Like long legs. They just show very little just to pique your interest, and that's it.
All you knew is there's a detective figuring out who a serial killer is.
That's it. Boom. And then the rest is just visual shit.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
Versus, you know, what trailer did we just watch?
Working Man.
Yes. Working Man. There you go. Instead of cutting it down to, you know, we understand it's just an action film, but to put in there like, oh no, you know, she was kidnapped, thinking it might have been a revenge plot. No, it's actually human trafficking. That's what happened.
Oh, wait, the CIA, the FBI, everyone's dirty on it, which that sounds like the plot twist point of the movie. Yes.
Yeah.
Like, they were literally showing that in the trailer.
Of just like the city officials, the cops.
They're all involved.
Mobsters. They're all involved in this.
Like, why would you tell me this?
Yeah.
That's the plot twist.
Yes. Like, they could easily cut down that trailer down to like, hey, it's a working guy. He might have some military background. No. Who knows?
I'm a working man.
He's a working man. That's all we know.
What's the joke?
And he has to save someone.
He has to save someone. That's it.
Save someone. Yep.
And just keep it. And then just show a bunch of little clips of, you know, cars blowing up, things happening here and there. But don't have the actual audio of the government's in on this.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah. That's my main issue with the whole marketing thing is that.
Marketed incorrectly.
It's all marketed incorrectly. To me, it's not, they fell behind. They're not catching up. They stick to an old format and they just think that this is solid gold, so we can stick to it
mm-hmm.
versus just like trying to, or even I try to create new formats.
So I wonder, with now firing this marketing director, hopefully hiring a new person, fresh face in there, and working now on these more smaller productions, do you think this will be a time for Warner Brothers to actually start recovering? It looks like they're trying to fix things. It looks like they're fixing things, trying to.
It looks like they're trying to, but they have to have faith in their entire team to do it.
And
that's what it is. Faith. They need to have faith, because if they don't have faith, then they're always going to keep stepping in and saying, nope, you're doing it wrong. Do it this way.
Mm. And don't forget, man, they're still trying to cut down on that debt.
So, okay, cut down the debt. Overall, film production jobs are at an all-time low. With this fire that's also happening as well.
They got it down. It used to be like $53 billion. It's now $45.3 billion.
Still working at it.
They're working on that.
Making a few payments here and there.
Yeah.
Wow. Look at you.
Making a few payments. They're, you know, they're
big budget boy.
Yep.
They're, you know, they established a payment plan.
little bit here and there.
Yeah, but yeah, it's going to be a long road for Warner Brothers to really start recovering and really start actually turning an actual real profit.
Yeah, it's going to be a while.
Oh, yeah. All right, well, we want to thank everyone for listening to this week's episode. I'm curious on your thoughts on tonight's topic. How you feel about Warner Brothers restructuring all their things? Do you think it's a good idea? Do you think it's bad? You can leave a comment below if you're watching this on a Red Band Podcast YouTube channel for our listeners to discuss episode topics and various other film-related news. We put out episodes every Wednesday for our audio listeners and Fridays for those who like to watch our videos. For audio listeners, you can find the Red Band Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and iHeartRadio. And of course, I'll say again, you can watch our video format on our Red Band Podcast channel on YouTube. And before I close out, Mike has those usual end notes for you guys.
Yes, as Anthony mentioned, all the different ways you can listen to us, including heading on over to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheRedBandPodcast. Look for the screaming microphone, so that way you can be able to watch these episodes as they're recorded. Our audio is usually released Wednesdays at 5 a.m., and then video is usually Fridays around 5 a.m. So you can be able to watch YouTube as they come out, usually around a week or so later as the time they're recorded. So, which are recorded on Fridays. And as he's mentioned, all the ways you can listen to us via streaming app or audio podcast app. So if you're out on the job, you're driving somewhere, or maybe you just want to listen to something as you're passing the time, you can find us on Samsung Podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Again, look for the screaming microphone. And of course, our Patreon account, which we have on all of our accounts. Head on over there and subscribe. That would be really helpful, because more subscribers equals more content. Because we want to keep making this stuff for you guys, and we enjoy what we do, and we want to make this a full-time thing. So please, head on over to subscribe so we can continue making these. And that's all I got. All
right, guys. You heard it from Mike. Please like and subscribe, and we'll see you next time.
Later, taters.